Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, my dear friends, fans, and colleagues, no matter where you are and when you're listening. Welcome back to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. And as I like to say, if you're listening live, you don't need a clock. We are here at 11 o'clock on Wednesday Pacific time, once a week. So you can, mark time by us. And you can listen to us from a variety of sources. You can go direct to my website, KarenTate.net, to listen. You can listen from Blog Talk, which is sort of the source of the show, where all my archives for the past 12, 13 years lives. And you can also catch us on all the usual podcast platforms that you're probably even more familiar with, whether that be Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, iHeart, all of those. We're there. You know, if you look for us, you can find us lots of ways. And just a shout out, a little bit of housekeeping here. That music you were listening to was just a little snippet, but a great great musical artist out of Las Vegas called Zingaya, and that cut was called Nomad's Land. And I always close the show with an homage to Sekhmet, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess. Sekhmet is the name of the cut, and that is by Abigail Spinner McBride. So if you're new to the show, I'm Karen Tate, and my guests and I discuss sex, power, gender, religion, politics, with a broad spectrum of visionaries and forward thinkers. Today we're going to be talking about alternative modalities, shamanic journeying, spirit journeying. We have our own little niche here. We're just a little bit different. And I like to think that we're creating a new normal here. You know, we're sort of blazing a trail for, what would be important in a future world that we are trying to create, because we certainly need a new normal. And today it is my great pleasure to have with me Laura Lee, and she is from the, I hope I don't murder this name, she is from the Cuyamunga Institute, and I'll let her correct me when she says hello if that was wrong. And what an interesting place. They teach ancient ritual body postures for spirit journeying. I actually delved into that a little bit when I was in recovery from the PTSD from the assault, and I found it really very interesting and helpful. It was very intriguing, and I'm so glad to be able to speak to her and actually chat about this in more detail. Laura Lee has been practicing and teaching these ritual body postures, which she describes as the modern version of a very ancient technique for naturally and easily shifting into an expanded state of awareness, liken it to a waking dream or inward reverie characterized by the experience of a split journey. She's taught this around the world for decades, for the last 10 years, she served as the director of the Cuyamunga Institute, which is the world headquarters for this practice. And that's where our talk takes us today, with all the many aspects related to this, as well as, their new workshops are going to be starting up again in Sedona next month. So we'll be sure to ask her about that. So Laura Lee, welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Well, Karen, thank you for asking. Good to be here with you.
Thanks. So did I murder Cuyamunga, or did I get that right?
There's various pronunciations, but Cuyamunga, 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 there's various pronunciations. It's a place name. So it is the site in New Mexico where the anthropologist who started this institute had a summer home and then created the worldwide headquarters for this work just at the northern edge of Santa Fe. So it's an ancient Pueblo village site. But she just borrowed the name because she landed there in the 1960s. And so, yeah. It means where the rock split. So we like to say, yes, shift happens with this work. Things shift into place. Yeah.
Well, I thought I knew a lot about a lot, but I had never heard about this until a few years ago. So I'm going to assume that I have a lot of listeners out there who also perhaps have never heard about using ancient ritual body postures for spirit journeying or shamanic journeying. Can you kind of give us a brief thumbnail of, you know, what this is, so we all sort of start at the same place of understanding?
Well, indeed. It has been hiding in plain sight that body postures make a difference. And there's various theories and reasons why this may be so, but it was Dr. Felicitas Goodman, anthropologist, who first started to notice in her field work in the Yucatan, in her study of early societies, even going back to the Paleolithic eras, that they were depicting body postures in many of their artifacts. And she, through various reasons, this, like a light bulb went off in her head, and she said, oh, okay, well, let's start experimenting with that. So she was using the ritual around this, which is drumming, smudging, honoring all the directions, to engage the universe to say, hey, just like the ancient people of those times felt, here is the universe. This is my backyard. We live in this glorious womb of creation, and we can engage this and stand in a body posture that she decoded as ritual instructions while we are accompanied by drumming, a sonic activation, and then go into what the laboratory test that she was asked to look into. This was in the 1980s at the universities of Munich and later Vienna, that into a waking dream. So we say that the body, the physiology, is this most sacred space, is the temple, and it can be activated and go through a normal shift, a physiological shift, the hallmarks of which we've seen in laboratory, but that's just a little of what truly goes on. And then this can be waking dream. We say beta plus theta, brainwave simultaneously, just one of the markers. And a vision journey ensues. This is without entheogens, without plant medicine, without drugs of any kind. It's the body's own inner pharmacopoeia. And you have this visionary experience. You are asking spirit, you can define it any way you like, to say, to give you, to gift you with a visionary experience. It might be a magnetic pull deep in the earth. It might be expansion into the whole cosmos. You might grow as large as the earth in this inner experience. You might be visionary, download of direct knowing, kinesthetic, audio. But we're gifted with a vision that has to do with personal insight and healing and revelation and joy. There's a lot of flourishing that happens. So gratitude and awe and wonder and emotional resilience, all the hallmarks. It's like sticking your finger in the socket of life force of the universe. And and it's a juicy, well, you've done this, juicy, wonderful experience.
Yeah, I've had some good experiences, and a good parallel, and feel free to correct me, you know, if I make any suggestions during our conversation that aren't accurate, I don't mind that at all. But I'm thinking of a mudra. You know, maybe people are used to seeing someone sitting cross-legged, and they maybe have their thumb to their second finger or something like that. That would be maybe just one minor example of a body posture, would it not?
Yes, indeed. And mudras, the hands, the arms are placed in various places on the body. Jinshin Jitsu people would say, oh, you're activating the spleen or the heart or the solar plexus often. So, and in fact, this is natural to us, right? If you want to embrace the whole universe, you raise your arms up, right? There's a wonderful viral image that a mother posted of her little daughter standing on heart-printed paper, and she has both hands over her heart, and she says, I am beaming out love even to the monsters of the world who need it the most. You know, we activate. Body language means something. So I would just say that our ancient ancestors of the Neolithic and the Paleolithic had many more body postures that meant something than we have today.
So
our DNA. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, how long does one have to hold that body posture for activation, or does it vary? And, you know, do you need any kind of mood music in the background to get you into a particular state or anything like that?
Good questions. We hold the posture for 15 minutes is all, while accompanied by a rhythmic rattle or drum. I'm going to grab a rattle. And it sounds like this. So I will play it for you. But it is accompanied first by that ritual, which is really to say, universe, I'm standing here. I'm reaching out to the far corners, and I'm here. Come visit me. But here's what the rattle sounds like. So it's a fast 200 beats per minute. But here's what I think happens. I think that this has been practiced for so many millennia. The oldest posture we have that works goes back 40,000 years to old Europe. And though it's been practiced around the world, we see postures as ritual instructions around the world from all these early cultures. But I think that the body reads the cues of the ritual so that it naturally and easily just makes the shift. It's not an intellectual thing. We're not telling the body what to do. But what we find is that, as mentioned, we're in beta through our normal waking state, but we're joined, because you're conscious and fully conscious through this, we're joined by theta, the brainwaves of the deep sleep mystical dreaming, where indeed your eyes are closed. Now your brain is inputting some other source to give you and light up that inner visionary screen of the mind. And blood pressure drops, yet pulse rate rises. Paradoxical. Usually they're happening both in tandem, up or down, but this is in opposite directions. And we also find a huge surge in the bloodstream of beta endorphins, those hormones of well-being, while stress hormones, cortisol and others, have an initial spike but then decrease greatly. And that those well-being hormones stay in our bloodstream for hours afterwards. So this is just a few of the hallmarks. We're working with a team of anthropologists at the University of Missouri to take us back to the labs, because from the 1980s, when these were first done in the laboratory, so many new tools, so many new technologies have been developed since then. So we're excited to go see what the full complement of this is. But you don't have to do anything. The body just makes the shift on its own. So in my mind,
Let me jump in a little bit here. So now a couple things. First, I wanted to ask you if you thought, you know, you're talking about how easily the body just sort of shifts, and I wonder if it isn't, you know, ancestral knowledge, you know, that it lives in our DNA. That's the first question. And the second question is, you mentioned a posture that's 40,000 years old. Can you describe that and tell us where it was found?
Well, I do think it's ancestral memory, and it does live in our DNA. In fact, we're hardwired, and all of us have the capacity to make the shift. If you have a healthy nervous system, you can do this quite easily, successfully, and people often have peak experiences, full tilt experiences on their very first time out. And then it is the Lion Man found in Germany that is a hybrid lion and man statue, a very famous one that you find. And so that is one of our earliest postures. We also have Sekhmet as a posture. We have many goddess postures that we use. Egypt is full of these wonderful postures. So that's really harkens back to its shamanic roots, I think. And by the way, shamans and mystics and religious specialists, yes, but this is open to everyone. If we're all issued the same equipment at birth, a human nervous system that has this capacity to make the shift and to go into these modes. The fact that we can do it spontaneously also is an indicator that we're all equipped to have these mystical moments. It's not for mystics only, for all of us.
Right.
And I
so
love
let me
that
ask
about
you about those goddess postures and the lion man posture. I'm familiar with that artifact. It is really old and quite beautiful, but I don't really remember what the body looked like so much. Could you describe that as well as the Sekhmet posture?
Mm-hmm. Oh, indeed. For the Lion Man, we actually put a board or a pillow under our heels so that we are lifted up on our toes because we see his feet are like that. And you're holding some tension to your arms at the side. So it looks, it's actually quite dynamic, though. It looks like you're just holding your arms at your side. You're tensed up. Your arms are a little bit elbows bent at your sides. And you look like you're about to take a leap. And your mouth is slightly open and you're looking straight ahead. So that would be the Lion Man. Most other postures have more going on with the arms and the hands placed on the body. So example for Sekhmet, we have a couple that we're using. One is she's seated with her legs orthogonal. So you're seated erect and your legs are at right angles, upper to lower. And you've got one hand on one leg and your other hand in a fist on the other leg, and you're looking straight ahead. So many Egyptian postures seem to be like that, but this is one where she's definitely Sekhmet. There's another one that is found in her temple in Luxor, and she's holding a lotus, and so a long white lotus and a flower on a long stem. And we do not show the posture or the artifact to our participants ahead of time because we don't want to lead them to this particular experience. But we demonstrate with a person, a photograph of a person or in a live group, you're holding the posture yourself as the leader of this or facilitator of this session. And so we just do this innocently. And there's a reason for that. We don't want to lead the experience. But what's startling is that so many times we will have in a group, and this can be on Zoom because we hold the weekly sessions on Zoom. It works beautifully on Zoom, though we're scattered around the world. We have a group experience, or we'll do it in person. But we find that every person's experience can be linked together because we share them as a round table. One by one, we share experiences. And only afterwards do we show the artifact itself. And then we often find correlations. Now, this is an interesting, even our pets seem to be activated sometimes by these postures because we will find in our, in people's living rooms on a Zoom, people who have cats, when we're doing a Sekhmet or a Bast, B-A-S-T, Bast, the cat goddess of Egypt, cats get activated. And we don't say it's from Bast. We don't say it's Sekhmet until far afterwards, and people don't know. But people report, oh, my cat insisted on coming into the room, and she sat right where I was sitting in this posture. Or she just won't leave me alone. She's sitting on my lap if I'm talking. She's purring loudly. And only then, after we hear everyone's experiences, we reveal the posture. And this happened with one where we were using a Bast posture out of the Metropolitan Museum, and they had done an x-ray of it. There was a cat mummy inside the artifact. The cats knew, it would seem.
Wow.
Four people with report their cats were very excited about this their session with this posture. So interesting things like that happen.
Let me jump in. I hate to keep interrupting you, but I want to, you're
barely
taking
please.
A breath between sentences. I'm having trouble jumping in.
I'll try and keep it brief.
No, that's okay. No, you're doing great. You're doing great. Just, you know, give me a little opening. So I'm thinking about Isis, and I know often Isis, you see her with the wings, and I wonder if you have an Isis posture that involves the wings or her arms in any particular posture.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot of goddess postures, and Isis certainly shows up, as does Osiris, in various postures. And we have a couple postures also that are from the whole region, Mesopotamia, and that whole Fertile Crescent and that area, where various things. She's standing with one arm outstretched as in a welcome pose, one arm at her side. We have them where both hands are under each breast. So, yeah, lots of goddess postures. And, you know, Isis is shown in various different poses. One of them is she's holding Horus. We don't have them. We've never held a baby, but that would be an interesting one as well. So, yeah, a lot of goddess postures.
No, I remember, Laura, when I was doing these postures with the group, and I actually then invested in, Felicitas Goodman's books, and they mention that some of the postures are for specific, shall we say, goals or focus. Yeah. How do we know that posture is tied to a particular thought form or something?
Well, it's through experimentation. And so Felicitas had a protocol early on. She was rolling these out through the 70s. And so they would pick a posture, oh, this looks like a likely one. And she would talk about looking at first for artifacts that have that unmistakable gaze, inward gaze that the artist had depicted on the face of the artifact as one of the many clues. Their arms, their hands, they were either seated or standing or sitting cross-legged or kneeling or in a chair. But the hands would always be doing something very specific that did not look like a normal pose. You don't hold your body in this pose for just lounging around. And then they would do trials. They would have, again, not show the artifacts. They didn't want to lead people to a particular experience. But she would write down people's experiences as we do today. We record everything. And we're still compiling and sorting through all of these. And we're testing new postures all the time. But it would be consistently over and over and over again. Categories. Healing,
gotcha.
Spirit, celebration, metamorphosis. But they're not hard and fast categories. Divination. We find downloads of information across the board, healing across the board.
So can you maybe give listeners some ideas about what kind of information may have come through or I'm guessing visions or sight that people may have gotten that maybe, you know, kind of the more extraordinary rather than kind of your typical everyday experience?
Well, I was compiling a list of lessons that show up again and again and again, truths. And it's interesting, the beautiful variety of ways that spirit delivers these in a vision. So much variety. So it's meaningful to us personally, but also I would say collectively. And over again, we have lessons in life, death, and rebirth. And so we may dissolve, we may be dismembered, we may be dismantled, we may go to the underworld and die in a sense. There's always, a death of some part of us or something we're giving up. But then there's that promise of rebirth. So then we may be dismembered, we may disappear. But then right before the session ends, we're re-stitched together again. And even better than ever. So life, death, and rebirth over and over again, which is a wonderful lesson when you're facing the loss of a loved one as well. There's this continual promise of rebirth and regeneration. That is just the dynamic of the universe. Another lesson is all of life is sacred. The sacred turf is our own physiology as well. Earth is sacred. The universe is sacred. The universe is our backyard. We are cosmic beings, all of it. We are at home in the universe. So one of those lessons again and again is that we are welcomed by the spirits. We are valued. We are loved universally. And that is so meaningful to us because we're growing up in a broken society. And it's hard
yeah.
to be truly healthy unless all of us are healthy. So one lesson is that all of life, all of our family, all of it, we are one. We have diversity in the unity, but we are all one family. And a lot of this is about right relations with ourselves, with our community, and with the universe at large. So again and again, the healing that takes place is for us, but for everything.
Yeah. Well, we were talking, well, this feels like a good segue, and I don't know if you can be more specific, but we were talking before the show about this, you know, this modality as maybe a good modality for, you know, healing trauma. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I'll tell a personal story of that, and we've heard many, 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 but my father died, and I was just full of regret. We had a beautiful relationship. Many times I told him how much I loved him, the lessons he taught me as a child, the life lessons when he met. We were spending months at the family home as we knew he was dying, but still it felt like I was being crushed at the bottom of the ocean. It was just devastating. And so I wasn't intending this, but a friend came by and she said, oh, let's do some postures. And I said, yeah, sure, let's do this. And so, and this wasn't in a big group. It was just her and I and Paul, my husband and co-teacher and co-director of this institute. And so my experience was that I wasn't intending this. It just happened, but it was my need for healing. But I found my father in a dark, deep, dark cave, and he was standing in a cage, and he was standing over a grate where there were embers burning. And my father was a dapper dresser and a very elegant man, and I was taking these old tattered clothes off of him and dropping them through the grate one by one. I was taking off these layers from him that were his regrets, as I understood, you know, his unfinished business, his wounds and hurts, and dropping them, helping him drop them. And then he became this bright being, bright, shining light being, as he was, his soul. And then I felt so much sadness, and I was wearing my own regrets. And he turned around, and he started to strip my regrets off me, my tattered clothing, my layers, and drop them through the grate. I get tearful when I remember this. And then I had resolved all those regrets. And so we were standing bright being to bright being, just in love, just a full complement of knowing one another and love, soul to soul. And then the rattle ended and I came out of it. And I just, everything was resolved. All my regrets were resolved. And I was just able to come back into the land of the living after that. And I was healed. And I have been able to understand and visit him just where I filled his presence near, and just have nothing but love now. So that was a major healing for
me. That's beautiful. That's incredibly beautiful. I unfortunately have to take a break right now, but it seems like a, you know, good thing to good positive note to leave people thinking about while we go to commercial. And then when we come back, we'll you know, we'll get into this a bit more. Thank you, Laura.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
So, listeners, I'm going to let you hear a word from Jo Carson about her book, Celebrate Wildness.
This is from Jonathan Nightshade, a Gardnerian high priest of the Whitecroft line, a traditional craft practitioner and researcher, writing about Jo Carson's book, Celebrate Wildness, Magic, Mirth, and Love, on the Farafaria path. I love this book, how special this work is and how appreciated. As someone who was young in the 1970s and through the years only found snippets of information on Farafaria, one of the first modern pagan paths, This book comes as an artistic revelation of the core practices of the way of the goddess and gods, reborn for the next age of the divine maiden. She has clearly introduced the historical background, philosophy, and ritual practices of the joyous wilderness mysteries of the fairy faith, illuminated by the marvelous pagan art of Feraferia's founder, Fred Adams. I was very pleased that the high-quality production of this oversized volume makes it a collectible work of art, as well as a testament to the visionary philosophy of Fred Adams. I feel blessed that I received a copy. I will treasure it and look forward to the next book for more of the deep philosophy and ritual practice of Feraferia.
Celebrate Wildness is a dense, art book quality hardcover book. You can get it for just $45 from the Feraferia website at feraferia.org. That's feraferia.org.
And if you haven't had a chance yet to go over and check out the Divine Feminine app, I know I remind you every week, but I know we all get busy. So please do check it out. I think you'll be very happy you did, because it's really a great means of connection to your local community and the goddess community at large. Find out what other people out there are doing. Even if you maybe aren't going to take that sacred tour or go on our retreat, be in the know and, check out what other people are doing. And who knows, one day you may find yourself on that tour at that retreat. So, yeah, it's the Divine Feminine app. Check it out. It's free. So I am talking to Laura Lee of the Cuyamunga Institute, and we are chatting about using ancient ritual body postures for spirit journeying or shamanic journeying or to trigger waking dreams. And Laura, spirit journeying, people use varying, techniques. You mentioned sacred medicines and I know drumming and breathing and that sort of thing. I know some people will go into trance, maybe sleep deprived or food deprived. Is there any preparation necessary, like any of that, before you start the journeying that maybe makes it easier or might enhance the journey?
Well, Goodman would say that don't eat right before the trance for at least 2 hours. Why? Because your digestion is a priority, and all the energy, which is quite a lot, that you're using for digesting, if you're if your body's doing that, that's the energy that you would launch with. In a waking dream, we find it's only 15 minutes because it actually is a little bit taxing to the nervous system. We know that the brain is using up the far majority of the blood sugar and the oxygen. I mean, we're high energy, high octane beings. So waking state takes up a lot of that, but so does dreaming. They find that the brain is so active during dreaming. So when you put those two together in that hybrid state of the waking dream, beta plus theta, you're burning up a lot of fuel. And so you're going to get hungry afterwards, and so we feed people, make sure their blood sugar is taken care of afterwards. But that would be the only thing that we want to do. We also say that your intellect, your doubting mind, can keep you up in beta brain predominantly. So one thing we say is that as you enter, shed your outer life behind for a moment. This is soul work. And so you just really need to get out of your own way. So it's not about doubting. Every time a vision comes up, you needn't pull it apart and say, is that real? Am I doing this right? Really just trust the process, trust your body, trust spirit, trust the process. And just let go and surrender to this. So it's about listening to the rattle. Somehow it seems to occupy that that mental self-talk. It's occupying it so that some other muscle, this other part of us, can come forward. And we could ask, from whence do these visionary journeys come? well, we're entering into a state of ecstatic trance. What we find is that we're actually touching the hem of something larger than ourselves, the definition Goodman had in an anthropological sense of ecstatic, ecstasis, stepping outside of your normal state. And that's really the definition, but it handily lends itself because it's so joyful and blissful and expansive. And we do feel like we're touching the hem of something larger than ourselves because of the shared nature of the vision, because of the immensity of the vision, because it knows us better than we know ourselves. It seems to have an intelligence to it. It is a piece of us.
Now, you've mentioned Dr. Goodman. Was she the one that first decoded these postures as ritual instruction? And what was she researching? I mean, what was her area of expertise before she made this discovery?
Good question. She died in 2005, and we got to work with her the last 10 years of her life. So we discovered her on a radio show as a radio talk show host, and we were looking, similar to your mission, Karen. It's like, how do we live optimally? Where are we going? What's it all about? And there's more to this world than our society tells us. And so let's go. And so she was a guest on my radio show, and what she had to say about psychological archaeology, about the full complement of direct access, that all of us can have direct access to these states, and that this is our birthright, a legacy that we have that our ancient ancestors knew well, and that helps steer them towards the values that have been handed down to us by indigenous societies for sustainability and equitability and social justice and community. She was an anthropologist looking at these societies, and really it was a National Institute of Mental Health study that she was asked to participate in, that she looked at 488 ethnographies from around the world about spiritual practices, making a short list of what they all had in common. And she felt like, well, if I can get to their essential steps, that would be what they all have in common. Any extraneous steps that are about their own culture, I'm looking for a way to give modern urbanites, Western culture, a legitimate road back to our indigenous roots without stepping on anyone culture's toes. And so she was really giving us a chance to go back to when we were all hunter-gatherer societies, when we were all participating in this equally, when we all had a sense of let's have direct access. She felt, and her studies as an anthropologist, and she was a linguist, she spoke and wrote 8 languages and more, she felt that it was the vagaries of history that took this access away from us. When we started to get into big agricultural societies where you had a king and a priest and the military to defend the society, the farmers who were growing the crops that supported the society, the artisans, the builders of buildings, all of those layers of society, now you had the priest who said, oh, you can only get there through me. You can only get there through the rituals that I say you can. So this cut off direct access to these divine realms. And so she wanted to give that back to us because she felt, aha, here's a means where it's part of our physiology. This is self-empowerment.
So the postures, are they at all related to yoga postures? And have you found any universal postures that sort of span different cultures?
Oh, what a great question. Yes, indeed. These are related to yogic postures. And it was a yogic study of yogic postures where V.F. Emerson, back in the 60s, a Canadian psychologist, finding that just holding a posture, yogic posture, for 5 minutes had some interesting results on the physiology, motility of the intestines, galvanic skin response, breath rate. He was delighted at this, and she looked at that research paper, and she said, oh, well, yogic postures, in her mind, only went back to India. And maybe an agricultural society. She wanted to go further back. That's why she was looking at the early, early, early societies and the artwork they left behind. But indeed, we believe that there's many sitting, cross-legged, kneeling, like yoga postures with your hands in your lap, doing various things with mudras, hands and specific postures, very related. And in fact, we are starting to work with a Vedic scholar, recently retired from the University of Iowa, who's a yoga practitioner, and saying, hey, you look at these yogic postures, now look at what we find around the world, cross-legged kneeling, similar, and sometimes the same. Let's find out what they have in common. They're activating some of these same pathways. And in fact, Goodwin would say that we are related, our work is related to all the energy work. All these different modalities are part and parcel of the same whole. Right? We all share the same physiology. And you can take away all the cultural DNA you would, because we share this physiological DNA with these inner capacities, we're going to rediscover it again and again and again. So we find that, yeah, we're just one of many modalities for activating this, these beautiful capacities that go far beyond our waking state. Early societies valued much more than the linear and the rational modes of thinking. They had a far bigger spectrum of functioning.
Yeah, I think we've probably lost an awful lot of knowledge, and this question may sound way out of left field, but I'll ask it anyway. Did she ever mention the teachings of Maria Gimbutas in any of those early cultures? Was there any tie-in with the postures?
Well, how beautiful. I have every one of Gimbutas' books right here in a stack in front of me along with Goodman's. And we use Gimbutas because she was looking at many of old Europe's goddess postures. And there's two attributes that we find that she noted that we note. And one is that these artifacts are full of geometric symbology. And we find spontaneously that we are seeing, we call them entoptic phenomenon. But one of the phases of going into trance is that you see a lot of geometric patterns. We see the same spontaneously. People aren't students of Gimbutas. They aren't students of entoptic. They aren't students of shamanism. We just take any and everybody open to this work, and we just say, here's a posture. Let it teach you what it wants us to know. The spirit is really the master and the guide here. We're just facilitators. We're just giving you access codes, the keys to your vehicle to go journeying in this modality. But we see the same geometric patterns over and over and over again. And they will show up in trances, not every time, but we see the same patterns. And then, in fact, the anthropologist team that we work with, they study the shamanic cultures of the American Southwest and Mesoamerica. And so often people will be showing their journals in Zoom. We can see each other in our journals. And they will listen to this, and she will often, this is Christine Van Poole, pull down a pot from her shelf, and she'll say, oh, we see this posture, this pot's in this posture, and we can see the same geometric patterns painted on this pot in this very same posture. It's wild. And the other aspect of Gimbutas is the bird face. So very often, we have experiences with birds. These postures depict the face of a bird, or sometimes wings can be depicted in many ways, and we could go on that. But let me just say that birds are often depicted. We have experiences of flying with birds, seeing through the eyes of birds, so we're looking down on a landscape, riding on the backs of birds or other spirit animals, growing wings. You can almost feel wings sprouting behind your shoulders. Lifting up into the upper world, flying, shooting up into the cosmos and back. So flight is very much a key part of these experiences. And isn't it interesting how often we have flown in our dreams? All of it.
True. True. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm glad I asked that question.
Beautiful question.
So we don't have a lot of time, and I'm sure listeners are thinking, okay, I want to experience this myself. Tell them how they connect with you, what the process is like, time, date, and about your new classes your face-to-face classes that are going to be starting.
Oh, well, let me tell you that we have an open and free and weekly sessions over Zoom where anybody can join in. It is a commitment for 2 hours because that's how long the process takes from the time we start the ritual to the time the last of us have shared our journeys and we've shown the artifact and its history, and then we have some after talk about it. So it's quite fun. So those are free and open on Wednesdays at noon to 2 Eastern, on Saturdays, noon to 2 Eastern weekly, and then on Mondays, we do an afternoon session. This is so people can join us after work. This is 7 p.m. Eastern to 9, and also so our friends down under, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, can join us as well. It's a convenient, it's their Tuesday morning. So it's second and fourth Monday, so twice a month. And then, and that's just open. Just sign up, go to the Cuyamunga Institute website. You'll see on the front page, you can register for it. And then we send you out an email, you get the Zoom codes, and just join in. And then our in-person workshop, we have, I think, 2 seats left. And this is in Sedona at our facility here, and it's around the equinox, so September 18th through the 22nd. And just go on the website, you'll see that, a description, here's the facility, here's what we're going to cover. But this is a group where it's 2 posture sessions a day with some fun activities as well in between. We eat meals together, we talk together, do art together. Art and spirit really lend itself well because it's such a visionary experience. And then we're going to go down to the VBRB Heritage Site on the equinox and watch. This is similar to the Sun Dagger of Chaco Canyon, but these sites are all over the world, but all over also the Southwest. And we will watch on the equinox a ray of sun come across a 100-foot vertical stone wall and bisect a spiral petroglyph that has been specifically placed, one for the equinoxes and a couple for the solstices, winter and summer. And we're going to watch that process with the man who discovered that it was a solar calendar. So we've had interviews with him, and he's quite fascinating. So he'll be there to explain how this all works. So that will be the culmination on the last day of our trip. And people are welcome to hear before or after a few days. If you come all the way to Sedona, if you want to go hike, you want to go explore, in addition to our workshop, yes.
Yeah, it sounds like an incredible opportunity. And I do want to mention as well for listeners, when you go to the website, the Cuyamunga Institute, and I want to spell that for you, it's Cuyamungue Institute. There's a lot of wonderful interviews from scholars on a lot of really provocative subjects to take advantage of as well. Wouldn't you say, Laura?
Oh, yes. And I wanted to invite you to that as well, Karen. And also, you're giving in-person workshops. Perhaps you might want to use our facility here at some point and run a small group. So lots of exciting crossover. It's so good to know you and so good to band together on this shared mission. So it's a delight to be here with you today and to get to know you and your community.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And, well, before we, you know, wrap this up totally, I mean, it's such a big topic, and I feel like we've only had a chance to scratch the surface. I want to give you the last word here. Is there anything I haven't thought to ask that you feel is important, or, you know, is there a particular website, or what have I missed? What do you want, you know, what's the last word, Laura?
I guess I would just summarize by saying, what a beautiful opportunity to be alive and to appreciate the physicality. So much of spirituality is about the non-physical, but this is embodied spirituality where the non-physical and the physical meet, and it's right here in our bodies, in our brains, in our minds, in our hearts, in our souls. We are indeed transmitters and receivers of the universal's knowledge. And however, whatever modality it is incumbent upon us for the general healing of ourselves and our planet, our culture, our society, our ecosystem, all of life here, to become, to find a way to be that transmitter, receiver, and engage in this ongoing dialogue with our Creator, with the universe. The goddess is alive. Magic is afoot. Oh, indeed. I love that saying. And we are part and parcel of that. And the goddess is here to jumpstart us, to inhabit us, to inform us, educate us, delight us, activate us to be the best transmitters, receivers, and ambassadors of her will that we can be. So what a joyous journey. And thank you for all that.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you. And, yeah, I'd love to do some crossover with you if at some point that opportunity presents itself. And I love that you reminded me of that saying. I hadn't heard it in a while, but I think it's something we should have in the front of our mind a little bit more often. So thank you. Thank you for that that remembering. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Karen, for all the good work that you do and for having us. And good to be part of the larger family of spiritual beings here having a physical experience.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Laura. And I'm sure we'll talk again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I have to feel like you probably did, and I hope this left you really curious about the Cuyamunga Institute. It's a wonderful experience to do this over Zoom, and the people are fabulous, and they're very casual and down to earth. It's nothing intimidating about the process. So, you know, check it out. I think you'll be glad you did. I had some wonderful experiences taking part, and quite honestly, I'm sitting here thinking, gee, why did I ever stop? Why don't I make time to do this again? It's very, very worthwhile, nourishing, valuable, and as Laura said, you know, even healing. So check it out, Cuyamunga Institute. And I think that about does it for me today. I want to thank you for being with me. I know there's an awful lot of podcasts out there these days, and your time is valuable. So thank you for listening to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. And I think I want to leave you with this saying from novelist Monique Wittig. For some reason, it feels appropriate to the conversation today. And she said, "There was a time when you were not a slave. Remember that. You walked alone, full of laughter. You bathed bare-bellied. You say you have lost all recollection of it. Remember. You say there were not words to describe it. You say it does not exist, but remember. Make an effort to remember, or failing that, invent." All right, listeners, thank you so much. And do me a solid, please, if you've been a follower of my work, you know, my books, my teachings, my classes, the podcast, please go to KarenTate.net. And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, you can buy me a cup of coffee occasionally. And that just puts a little money in my pocket to be able to keep doing shows like this, because this is not a moneymaker. This is a service to the community. I'm not one of these podcasters that, you know, that this is their job, that, they have an income from the show. This creates no income for me. So if you want to support me in some way, like I said, you can go to the website, buy a book, buy me a cup of coffee. I really appreciate hearing from you. All right, so thank you very much, and we will close, as always, with an homage to Sekhmet, the Lady of Tenacity Manifested, who tells us to have courage, strength, resilience, and to say no without guilt, and to have healthy boundaries so we're not used and abused or harmed. Here we go, Sekhmet.